This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague John Hardy of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Eyes on Ukraine conflict and the Russian claims and the Russian battlefield and the battle space entirely we begin with, because that is at issue always in negotiations. John, a very good evening to you. It has been said over these last weeks that the Kremlin is claiming territory it does not possess, claiming the Donbass entire, which means four provinces in Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. I want to establish what it is that the Kremlin does possess and what not. My understanding is that Kherson and Zaporizhia are completely out of the question. If there's any Kremlin presence, I can't see it on the battlefield. Do they have a position in either of those provinces? Good evening to you, John.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me back on the show. So just a couple points of clarification. The Donbass refers to two regions in eastern Ukraine, Donetsk and Luhansk. Russia controls just about all of Luhansk and maybe about three quarters or so of Donetsk Oblast. The latter is where Russia is concentrated its main effort, especially around the small city of Pokrovsk and nearby Konstantinivka. In Zaporizhia and Kherson, these are two regions in southern Ukraine. Russia controls varying percentages of those, but it really has very little prospect of taking the rest. These areas are lower priorities for the Russian military, at least at the moment, especially Kherson, really just not a whole lot of attacks there. It's just kind of positional fighting. In Zaporizhia, you see a little more activity, but again, not a ton of Russian attacks there. As I said, in Donetsk Oblast is really where Russia is concentrating its main effort. I mentioned Pokrovsk, Konstantinivka, the nearby city of Turetsk, Chasiv Yar. Also a little bit to the southwest, the Russians are trying to advance northwest of Velika Novosilka and push into the Dnipropetrovsk region. They've started to do that. So they're kind of trying to push behind some of the Ukrainian forces in the eastern part of Zaporizhia and Dnipropetrovsk. Pokrovsk, I think it's worth dwelling on that, given that it's the Russian main effort. I think on last week's show, maybe the week before as well, we discussed the Russian kind of penetration or tactical breakthrough near Dobropilia, a small city, maybe 20 or so kilometers north of Pokrovsk. The Ukrainians have managed to contain that, redeploying some of their more elite units to that salient. And actually, it appears, based on reports from the ground, they've cut off some of the Russian troops there and basically just contained the salient. So, you know, the Russians still advance there, but the kind of worst case scenarios were avoided, where Russia could have, exploited that tactical breakthrough and perhaps even achieved an operational level breakthrough, something they have not been able to do despite holding the initiative since fall 2023. So the Russians, in short, are continuing to make these kind of incremental attritional gains, but aren't able to kind of capture large swaths of territory at once. Moving a little bit further north, the area around Siversk and Liman, the Russians have been making some gains there in recent weeks, trying to get back to that town of Liman in support of their objective to capture the rest of Donetsk Oblast, particularly the cities of Slovyansk and Kramatorsk. And then I think it's also worth noting the area around Kupiansk in northeastern Ukraine, where the Russians have, over some months established various bridgeheads across the Oskil River and are now trying to loop behind Kupiansk. And according to reports from Ukraine, have started to penetrate that city from the northern side. And then I guess we should also mention the area near Sumy in northeastern Ukraine. Here, some months ago, the Russians had, after retaking Kursk, the territory Ukraine controlled in Kursk Oblast, and started pushing across the border into Sumy. The Ukrainians redeployed some forces there that have been pushing the Russians back. So that that area seems pretty stable, if not to Ukraine's advantage.
What I hear is that Russia controls no single complete province. It certainly doesn't control the Donbass and doesn't control the connecting provinces to Crimea. Is that all correct? They've got pieces of everything, but no domination.
They control basically all of Luhansk. It's maybe like 99%. So they've essentially accomplished the goal. But I think Donetsk, as I said, is the one they're focusing on now, both in their military efforts and in their demands in the negotiations. Putin demands that Ukrainian forces withdraw from all of the rest of the Donbass, including Donetsk Oblast, as part of a peace deal. There are other demands as well. In the southern provinces, he is essentially offering a freeze along the current lines. Obviously, Kyiv has quickly dismissed these demands. It would be basically suicide for Zelensky, and also they'd be sacrificing some pretty defensible terrain, undermining their ability to withstand a potential future invasion. Although I think it's worth noting that the so-called Fortress Donbass, Fortress Belt in Donetsk Oblast, these kind of defensive lines and cities of Kramatorsk, Slovyansk, Juzhkivka, what have you. The Russians, I think, in a follow-on invasion, probably wouldn't try to go at these head-on. They try to encircle them. Nevertheless, it's defensible terrain that Ukraine would be really foolish to give up willingly.
In the hypothetical of the battlefield being frozen by negotiations, does Ukraine hold the front line that is sustainable, or is it fragile here and there?
I think the Ukrainians have really dug in across the front and established multiple layers of defensive lines. I think those will be useful in a potential future third follow-on war. Right now, with many of these large fortifications and trenches, what have you, the Ukrainians actually are not fighting from those. They're fighting from more smaller positions that are concealed in tree lines. But that system of anti-tank obstacles, minefields, fortifications, etc., I think it is still useful.
And the penetration that is reported by the Russians, what are the tactics, John? Are they using drones and small teams, or are they using armored vehicles? How do they penetrate? When they do?
So the Russians still occasionally use armored vehicles. That's gotten more and more rare as time has gone on. They are typically attacking in very small units, sometimes down to just a few soldiers or even one or two. And so they'll basically send them through very porous Ukrainian lines, and these Russian troops will try to basically go as far as they can, maybe a few kilometers, and then start entrenching, and then the Russians will try to accumulate additional forces. So what you kind of end up with is a front line that doesn't exactly look like a line. It's more like a big gray zone with Russian and Ukrainian positions sort of overlapping. Ukraine, they continue to struggle with a shortage of manpower. The threat of Russian glide bombs, artillery, Molniya, strike drones, FPVs, drone drop munitions, what have you, that kind of discourage Ukrainian infantry from sticking their heads up out of their positions. So often you have these Russian troops kind of going past Ukraine positions without being engaged by infantry, relying more on those strike drones of various types to destroy the Russian attackers. Another thing worth mentioning is that in combination with this kind of adapted style of assaults, you have the Russians making some headway in kind of improving their own employment of strike drones of various types. The elite Rubicon Center is worth mentioning here. I think we've discussed them on previous podcasts, but that center comprises both combat detachments and an analytical center. So they have kind of improved Russia's ability to both take down other Ukrainian drones, which are used for reconnaissance or dropping munitions, whatever, and also conducting strikes against targets. So especially logistics is something Rubicon did well in Kursk and is now bringing to other parts of the battlefield, kind of isolating pockets by exercising a degree of fire control over key roads, often like kind of leaving FPV drones typically are often fiber optic models that are immune to electronic warfare, leaving them on the sides of roads, kind of in standby mode, waiting for a vehicle to pass and then striking it.
The heavier equipment, the heavier weapons, the artillery, are there artillery duels, or have the drones removed that from the battlefield?
So, artillery remains important, despite the fact that you often see stats like drones of various types cause like the majority of casualties on both sides. I think that's true, but artillery still plays a role, including in poor weather, including as a way of kind of funneling forces into kill zones. So it's still important, even as strike drones of various types have taken on maybe pride of place for the Ukrainians.
Is there air cover, either rotary winged or fixed wing, over the battlefield? Does it stay away because of anti-air?
Yeah, you see both sides employing tactical and army aviation, especially the Russians. The Russians are dropping, 100 plus, 150, sometimes even up to like 200 glide bombs per day. That remains a challenge for Ukraine. You see the Russians employing army aviation attack helicopters, both to kind of lob unguided rockets, which isn't very effective, but also to launch like ATGMs, including the Lemur long range ATGM, like usually against like in the latter case, usually against like fixed targets. So yeah, that still plays a role.
And is there active mining going on, or is that all done now?
No, absolutely. Both sides, mines are really, really important for both sides. I think especially for the Ukrainians, given that they're on the defensive, very often placing those mines using UAS. And so for the Russians too, you have drones dropping mines like in the Ukrainian rear. And by the way, they started using their Garand 2, which is the Russian version of the Iranian Shahed-136. Those drones carrying PTM-3 mines to remotely mine on roads in the Ukrainian rear. So that's just kind of one method the Russians are using for that remote mining.
Speaking of John Hardy, in detail, John is giving us a picture of a battlefield that has not moved profoundly for some time, with small weapons tactics that are augmented by drones and major weapon systems. We're going to turn to the other weaponeering. That would be talk, talk, talk. Jaw, jaw, jaw is what Churchill called it. NATO and the Russian Federation and Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.